This is Julio Rodriguez, and this is the Lookout Landing Podcast.
I don't mind you coming here and wasting all my time, because when time to do a podcast comes oh so near, I kind of lose my mind. Welcome, everyone, to the Lookout Landing Podcast. My name is Matthew Robertson. I'm joined today by an East Coast guest who is several hours ahead of us in the future and much, much wiser for it. It is a huge fan of the band The Cars, I think. A friend of mine, a former horse girl, and Lookout Landing emeritus faculty member, and Hall of Famer. A lot of titles. It is Isabel Manassian. Isabel, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for that incredible introduction. I think I'm going to make that my new voicemail message, because I realized recently I haven't updated my voicemail since I was really in high school, which is sort of embarrassing, but I guess who calls anyone anymore?
Great point. Yeah, if you need me to record other things, I'm available for voice work.
Thank you. Or I'll just use the incredible Cars introduction. Yes, you were correct. I am a Cars fan.
Thank you. Yeah, I have a lot of very specific knowledge about you that could be used in a lot of ways for this podcast, but I will keep it family friendly, as this is, I think, a PG to PG-13 rated show, I would say.
That's incredibly kind.
How many different pronunciations of your name have you heard?
Oh, God. More than I even thought possible, because you know there's a finite number of letters in my name, so you would think that I would have heard them all, but really throughout my life new ones have popped up. Truly the most, I guess, you stop being embarrassed when people mispronounce your last name by like middle school or high school-ish, and eventually you're just like, yeah, whatever. The Kardashians, I'll be honest, did a lot to help me in teaching people how to say my last name. So that is one good thing they have done. No, but the worst was in high school for our like National Honor Society. This is a subtle flex that I used to be smart. They put our names like out on some sort of sign-up sheet or whatever just to like share that you were great. And they had written my name Mini Asian.
Oh my gosh.
Which was awful. And my friends, of course, being the good friends that they are, had a real blast with that one. So
that is tough. Yeah. Mine is interesting because it's either, you get two pronunciations. It's either Robertson or Roberson. And there's people who like use both. So it really doesn't help on either side because we have so much sort of dissent within the Robertson Roberson family. So it makes things tough. I also have a high school story before we get into the actual podcast that we promised everyone. My high school gave me some sort of like certificate, like one of those kind of like bullshit awards they give you, like spirited student or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they spelled my last name Robison, which is really not remotely close. Yeah, it was like they heard someone say my name and like, all right, yeah, we think we got it. And they just wrote it down.
Oh, God.
And then they gave it to me on a plaque. Like they could have like double checked at least once, and they did not. So I have somewhere probably at my dad's house.
They put it on a plaque too?
Or not a plaque, like a like a piece of nice paper, like somewhere in the middle of like word art and an actual plaque was what I got. You can find that on my Twitter, I think. I'm sure I posted about it because I am a genius and have had the same Twitter since high school, which is kind of a scary thought to realize right now, but I've made it this far, so no turning back.
I still can't believe you tweeted in high school. And
tweeted a lot in high school.
willfully have not separated yourself from that. I think it
you
speaks highly to your sense of self-confidence.
Yes, exactly. Let's go with that. And you need a certain level of self-confidence, I think, to have a podcast and think that people need to hear all of your thoughts and your ideas this much, that they're out there also forever. Like, this is not going anywhere. So keep that in mind at Isabel's employers.
Yeah. Oh, God. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Isabel, for those who don't know, is a employee of the Baseball Hall of Fame. Does the Hall of Famer bit ever get old? Like people saying like, oh, yeah, my friend Isabel, she's a Hall of Famer. Like Hall of Famer Isabel Manassian. Has that sort of run its course yet, or are you still basking in that glow?
My dad really did his best to like run it into the ground. It's still very cool to like, it's still incredible to work there, and that still feels giddy. Do I love being referred to as a Hall of Famer in public settings? Not especially. Makes me feel weird, but especially because like, by and large, most of my day is spent in this like little basement hovel, like typing in the corner. Hardly Hall of Famer status.
Well, you're a Hall of Fame podcast guest, I'll tell you that. And for anyone who maybe hasn't been listening to our off-season series, I've just been talking to people, friends, Lookout Landing staff members, about how they became a Mariners fan. Because I think something that I've noticed recently, especially with this terrible season the Mariners just endured, is that people have a lot of different ways of consuming this team, and that became really apparent during a bad season where a lot of people will start paying closer attention to the minors or check out of baseball completely or just, you know, go full-blown, like, detachment. So it was something that was on my mind, and we've been pumping out a couple of these. If you want to listen to past ones, I did ones with Lookout Landing writers Zach Gottschalk and Grant Bronsden. And today we have Isabel, who is a former staff member, still kind of an editor, still kind of a lurker and surprise fan poster, and I'm hoping still a Mariners fan deep down in that Cooperstown heart.
Yeah, it was a season of transitions all around, you know, personally and for the Mariners, and that didn't always coincide in a good way. And one of the so my mom is a huge baseball fan. She and I are very close, and it was one of our sort of like weird small fights. I think like a couple, like a month into the season or something, when they had really started that downslide after they'd been sort of sneakily incredible. But she, like, we were talking on the phone and she kept asking, like, she kept asking me questions about this reliever and what I knew about this guy and if I'd seen this play. And I was so, at that point, I was, like, not watching Mariners baseball because the time difference and they sucked, and I was feeling sort of disenchanted with the current team and all of the conversations around it. And I was just like, Mom, I haven't watched the Mariners play baseball in weeks. I don't want to talk about it. I don't know. I'm sorry. And which is, like, the meanest I'll ever get to my mother. Yes, still a Mariners fan, but
okay,
in a different way. Yeah.
Well, the reason I ask is because this year I feel like, I mean, like I mentioned and you kind of hinted at, would have been like a very logical season, especially for someone who moved across the country, to just say, you know what, I'm gonna punt this season. Like, wake me up in 2020. Like, that's, I'm glad that you know kept some sort of finger on the pulse. But like, it would have been totally understandable, I think, to check out, because I mean, I live in Seattle and I still for the most part really checked out once it hit like June, July, and August, like the true dog days, and they were just getting the shit kicked out of them all the time. I realized that, like, it's like when you're watching a bad TV show, you know, because that's essentially what this is. Like, it's just entertainment. It doesn't really, like, there's no real like morality or anything to be found in baseball, at least in my opinion. I just watch it because I like it. So that to me tells me, like, if it's bad, like if you're watching a TV show you don't like, just turn it off. You can wait until it gets good again. And I know a lot of people kind of buck back against that, like, oh, you have to crawl through the mud to, you know, fully appreciate it. But I think also when you're being sort of in it, like when you have to devote a lot of mental capacity, and I'm not trying to like play the victim here, all I do is make jokes about the Mariners on the internet, but when there is some sort of like attention level that's needed, I think that it can become really easy to get burnt out and not enjoy it. And at that point, it's like you're not doing anyone any favors by just like kind of trudging through it when the option to leave is right there. You know what I'm saying?
It's exhausting. It's like, I don't know, covering the team in any capacity, whether it's LL or, you know, you're a beat writer, whatever. It's like, I don't know, I sort of, in my mind, think of it like you're squeezing out a dish towel, and some seasons you've got like a really soaked dish towel, so you've got a lot that you can squeeze out of it, and you make it to the end of the season and it's not as much of a drag. And this year I wasn't even actively covering the team, and it just felt, I felt wrung out reading, consuming, engaging in conversation about the team just almost right off the bat. And part of that too is that I've tried to be a prospect person for, I don't know, 2-3 years now. I thought it'd be cool to know who the guys are coming up and get their stories and then get to see them like on the major league stage and be like, oh, I followed him, I thought he'd be great, whatever. I'm not very good at judging if a player is going to be good or not, largely because my judgment is often clouded by, like, oh, do you have a sad story? Like, did you try really hard? Are you very small? And now you've found success, and, like, maybe you're clinging to it. I hope you succeed. I'm rooting for you. I don't actually think you will have success on the field, but I can't quite separate those two beliefs in my mind. And I also, it's probably the most defeatist I ever get about baseball, but, like, practically speaking, it's very depressing for me to look at all of these guys and all of these minor league levels and recognize that objectively, many of them are not going to matter, and they're going to fade away into the ether and go on and live really, like, happy, wonderful, productive lives, just not as professional baseball players. And that makes me sad. So in the grand tradition of avoiding the things that make me sad, I just say no.
I hear you. I think that's really, like, an important point, because in every other aspect of life, if you were to tell someone, like, yeah, I've been doing this thing every year of my life for multiple months at a time, and it makes me mostly sad, everyone would be like, yeah, stop doing that. But with sports, there's this weird, like, loyalty that people have. And I get it. I mean, I definitely do this as well. But, like, people really react in a certain way if you were to tell them, like, yeah, I stopped being a Mariners fan strictly because they were so bad at baseball. Like, people get almost offended by that. And I think Mariner fans especially, we have this, and I'm saying we because, like, me and you are definitely part of this. Like, I don't want to try to, like, stiff arm everyone else who's not us, you know? But I think there's, for Mariners fans, there's this, like, comfort in bad baseball. So, like, this year you see a lot of people who are like, oh, this is what I'm used to, we know they're going to be bad, so they can, like, actually kind of spread their wings a little more than when the team is good. And the team was good for those four seasons. Everyone was kind of looking at each other like, how do we talk about this? This is completely new experience. And then when they're bad, people can feel like they're their truest Mariner fan self and, like, really slink back into the terribleness, which is, like, I get it, but it's also, like, so weird because it's so specific to baseball, or I guess to sports fandom, but really for Mariner fandom, because other teams, you know, once every blue moon actually luck into a good season, and we just have not had that for whatever reason.
Yeah, it's one of those things that just, there's, like, an undercurrent of defeatism throughout Mariners fandom, I think, and some people respond to that by being, like, really excessively overtly positive, and other people really lean into the pessimism. And there's not, at this point anyway, the collective fan base hasn't really found a way to handle a middle ground. And I think part of the issue this year, and part of what has, like, made it a little more sustainable in the past, is, like, this year we knew, you know, months before the season started that they were going to tank and they were not going to be competitive, and so it was a lost season. And I think in the past, like, especially in, like, the recent past, they had been bad, but sort of surprisingly so. And because we didn't have, you know, months and months to prepare, I think there was more interesting discourse in the past of, like, maybe they'll be good, maybe they'll sort it out, maybe, maybe, maybe. But this year was just like, no, they're supposed to suck, and they're gonna suck, and they do suck, so now what? And because it was so quiet and everything was so uninteresting, I think people got really snippy with each other, and it made for a really, I don't know, I had a hard time grappling with a season that was so overtly just killing time. Like, we spent 2019 just waiting for Jared Kelnick to get older.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. If we could put, like, a tagline on the 2019 Mariners, it was just waiting for Jared Kelnick and Julio. Let's not forget Julio.
True.
The patron saint of this podcast. But that thing you said about, like, it hits way different when you have nothing to lose, or, like, you don't even allow yourself to get hurt in the first place, like, when you know that the team is going to be bad, like you said. Me and my roommate have gotten really into Love Island, the British reality show. And you see this in the show. It's really actually very funny. Like, there are two types of people on Love Island. There's the person who comes in and, like, treats it as, like, fun. Like, oh, yeah, like, if I go home, I go home. Who cares? And then there's the people who, like, come in and are, like, really invested in everything and, like, really want to win Love Island and find love. And I don't like those people as much. I like the ones who come in and, like, I'm going to play to my strengths, kind of like the Wade LeBlanc or Marco Gonzalez of Love Island. Like, I'm going to do what got me here. I'm not going to try to be performative or try to throw 100 when really I throw 88. Those are my kind of people, you know? Like, that's what I wanted to see on Love Island, and I guess sort of in life, is these people who are, like, realists, I guess is the way to put it. Like, people who understand that you can't always turn shit into a diamond. You know what I mean? Like, there's sometimes it's just impossible, and it's very liberating to realize that, like, things can be bad and enjoyable, or you don't have to maybe devote as much to it as you would want to, and it can still be fun. Like, you find the silver linings in the dump, like the Dylan Moores or the Ryan Courts or whatever, you know? That was a really convoluted metaphor, but it just came to mind when you were talking about knowing from the jump that it's going to be bad or kind of a joke.
I think I followed. I'll confess my biggest takeaway from that brief soliloquy is that if I pay you, you know, what, $5 a week or something, will you write me weekly recaps of the Mariners season, but as Love Actually plot lines? Or not Love Actually, okay. Love Island plot lines.
I could try, for sure. Do you watch the show? Because otherwise it's probably not going to make a ton of sense.
I tune in the way that I tune into pretty much any trashy love show.
Okay, yeah,
so
that makes
sense. I'm familiar with the players, and I'm familiar with the themes, and, quite honestly, were you to produce this requested content for me, I would be a much more avid Love Island watcher.
Gotcha. Well, my issue is the show gained a lot of popularity because they brought it to America, but my roommate and I only watched the British version because we like the accents, so I'd have to figure out a way to...
You can only watch the British version.
Okay, cool. I just wanted to make sure we're on the same page.
No, having lived in England for whatever it was, 5 or 6 months, there's like a different level of trash there, and it makes for the very best TV.
Totally. A lot of lads. Did they use the term geezer when you were in England? That's a term that gets thrown around a lot in Love Island villa.
In reference to...
Like, just a dude. Like, kind of like a... I'm trying to think of the American equivalent.
Like an old guy?
No. It's like a contemporary. Like, it's almost like dude. Like, lad is kind of like the party boy, but, like, anyone can just be a geez. Like, they'll be like, oh, yeah, I like that geez.
No, that must be new hip England slang.
It might be. I'll try to incorporate that. can we go back for a second? I want to know... Because I know a little bit of your backstory, but I think it'd be fascinating for the listeners. How did you originally become a Mariners fan? You mentioned that your mother is the big baseball fan of the family, but she was not a Mariners fan from birth. Is that correct?
No. So my mom is a baseball fan by way of the Dodgers. So she and my dad both grew up in Santa Monica. And my uncle, who is my mom's younger brother, he loved baseball. He played. My mom was like a very early beneficiary of Title IX. She actively wanted to play on my uncle's baseball team, but wasn't allowed to. Title IX was enacted, and she got to join. She actually recently found this very funny letter from my grandmother to her and my uncle's baseball coach, basically asking him, please put Carolyn as far away from the baseball as possible to, like, put her in the outfield. Like, she was very concerned. But my grandma grew to love baseball, so came by it in that fashion. My family was not a sports family growing up. There were two times a year where we watched literally any sporting event before I was, like, 9 or 10. And that was the Rose Bowl, assuming, of course, that the USC Trojans were in it. And it was the USC-UCLA game, because my parents both went to UCLA, and my grandfather, who I thought for a really long time was a USC grad, actually graduated from the University of Indiana and just really enjoyed the USC marching band.
Oh, wow.
So took on that mantle and became a big Pete Carroll fan during his time there.
And a literal bandwagon fan.
Yeah.
Never before seen.
All of which is to say, sports were not a big part of my life growing up unless I actively sought them out. Like, my dad wants nothing to do with them in any capacity. He's there for the hot dogs, and that's about it. He'll be really mad when he hears me say that, because anytime we sort of give him grief about that, he's like, I love sports, I love baseball, and talks about the time that he, like, would go to Dodger Stadium and eat 8 Dodger dogs in one sitting because they were a dollar or something.
Oh, you love the Dodgers? Name 3 of their hot
dogs. All of which is to say, I started playing softball when I was, like, 8, and loved being able to watch a sport on TV that I could play and understand in some fashion. It's been part of my hurdle in becoming a real, true football fan, you know, besides all of the NFL garbage. I've never played football, so I don't get the same sense of awe when I see them do something that I know I've tried to do and is really hard, and I can't analyze it in the same way. So, yeah, started young and came to baseball and to the, I guess, came to the Mariners specifically. This is all very long and rambling. Podcasts really are, like, the ultimate narcissist thing.
Oh, God, it's the best.
But I wrote a, so I guess I grew up in the Bay Area primarily, and we moved in 2001, just before the Giants and Angels World, no, 2002, so just before the Giants and Angels World Series, and it completely took over my third grade classroom. Like, everyone had strong allegiances. One of the boys I had a crush on, his, like, godfather was Dusty Baker, so he actually got to go to the games.
Whoa.
Shout out to Gus Gratinger.
Wait, this isn't an actual relative of Dusty Baker, though, right? Like, not the kid who ran on the field?
No. This guy, he was his godson. They were connected somehow. And I just remember being sort of taken aback by how invested these kids were, like, my classmates were in it, and I was like, we had just moved to California, like, a year or two before that, and I was like, why do you care so much? Like, a California team wins no matter what. Yay! they were like, no, that's
it's
not
very
how
diplomatic
this works.
Of you.
Yeah, but in my quest, like so many young kids, to be unique in some capacity, I adopted the Seattle Mariners because I had been born in Seattle and no one else that I knew was a Mariners fan, and it made me special. So I, like, wrote about Ken Griffey Jr. for my book report, and it was during a good Mariners time, obviously. So when I would check their, like, teeny tiny box score in the San Francisco Chronicle, it was often good news. I was a very passive fan, though, up until, I don't really know when. I guess, I don't know when my baseball fandom changed and became stronger. I guess I have a really distinct memory of visiting Seattle before we moved back up there, and reading the sports page and being so overjoyed at the fact that they had like pages of full coverage on the Mariners. It was such a like novel and fun thing.
Yeah, that having that like thing that you can tangibly be connected to the team through was super helpful for me as well. Like the newspaper was a big one. Just having the channel on TV that was dedicated to the Mariners. Like when I was a kid, Root Sports might as well have been just the Mariners channel. You know what I mean? Or I guess FSN Northwest is what it was called back then. And the other thing you said about like that kid, like the hive mind of kids around you also liking it, is such a powerful drug. I remember this would have been like first grade, I think. Somehow all of the first grade classes at my elementary school like collaborated to adopt a penguin at the Woodland Park Zoo. Sorry. And yeah, it was amazing. Very exciting. And one of the tasks we had was naming the penguin. After like a long series of elections and, you know, people campaigning for their favorite name, the one that we landed on was Ichiro, which in retrospect, great name. Even if Ichiro wasn't a baseball player, like that's just a strong name on its own. But like realizing that that many kid cared about the Mariners and Ichiro and like all banded together to name this penguin was one of the, like, I still remember it now, obviously. Like it was one of the cooler like baseball adjacent memories I have from childhood.
What a special thing. Oh, also like what a precious mental image to think about a penguin waddling around named Ichiro. Like, right? That's outrageously sweet.
I know. I think in my mind, then the penguin like took on all of Ichiro's physical characteristics. Like it was really fast and like very sleek, very fashionable. I don't know what happened to Ichiro though. I would love an update. I don't know how long penguins live, but this was like 2001, so could be an old, you know, decaying penguin at this point.
How long do penguins live? Do you know?
That's what I'm saying. I have no idea.
Huh. We should
ask. If they're anything like Ichiro, he'll age very gracefully.
That's very true. Yes. Yeah.
So I was just gonna try to piece your fandom together here. That the bridge from like being the Mariners fan because you thought that would be unique to like an actual Mariners fan is pretty fascinating to me, because that means at a certain point your brain just morphed and you're like, oh, this thing that I was doing as a bit is now like an actual thing. And it's also interesting because the Mariners were progressively getting worse as we aged.
They in terrible, terrible, terrible timing, we moved summer of 2009 back up to Seattle, and I believe either that year or the following year, the Mariners became the first team with a payroll over $100 million to lose 100 games.
Correct.
And then, of course, in 2010, the Giants, who I had loved and had been going to see regularly when we lived down there, they won the World Series. so I felt a little bit like a curse for a while. And I guess I'll confess, with many, many apologies to you, of course, there was a strong interim where I was probably more of a Red Sox fan than anything else.
Oh, no.
So we didn't watch TV. I wasn't watching baseball games. I wasn't watching the Mariners. I could check in with them in the sports page, and I didn't have access to internet. So it was a very loose and untethered sort of loyalty more than anything else. But I really loved history. So I became like a true bona fide baseball fan by reading baseball history books. There was a series by Dan Gutman, called like the Traveling Baseball Card Series. And it was this boy who had this magical power. If he touched or if he held a baseball card, he could be transformed or be transported back to that time, and he would be with that baseball player. So he did this like with the Honus Wagner T206 card, and he did this with like a Roberto Clemente card, and he tried to like stop Clemente from getting on the plane, and he did it with like a Jackie Robinson rookie card. And like They were so much fun. They were such fun books.
That's fascinating. I missed these somehow, but like the whole, like when you said stop Clemente from getting on the plane, I'm like, whoa, that's pretty heavy stuff. Like this like butterfly effect sort of thing where it's like this guy's trying to rewrite history through magical baseball cards. Sounds a little bit like Dragon Tales too, where you can have like a physical image transport you to another world.
Exactly. Exactly. Highly recommend those books still. Like anyone who's listening who has to buy books for a young child or just wants some fun off-season reading.
Or these books could sponsor the pod, Isabel. Never forget that.
Also true. That's right. We are a capitalist society. Yes.
Yes.
So through that and through... So the Red Sox at that point were like a downtrodden team. And the first time I remember like really watching playoff baseball and like with a vested rooting interest was during the 2004 World Series. But I liked the Red Sox because they had tried for so long and they'd been so bad and they had this really wonderful history that I got to dive into. So for a stretch, I was like a Red Sox fan. I was a Giants fan and I was, I guess, third tier a Mariners fan. We would like troop out to the Oakland Coliseum and watch any time the Mariners came to town, but it was always a terrible experience because you don't really want to watch baseball in the Oakland Coliseum, especially not when you could be watching baseball at the Giants Stadium, which at that point was like Pac Bell Park, AT&T Park. It had like three names while we were living there. Yeah, and then I think just being back in Seattle made a real difference in I got to actually go see games at Safeco, and there were other people who wore Mariners t-shirts. Like, that helped reignite my specific Mariners fandom. And the other thing I've learned, like, so I went to school in Pennsylvania and studied abroad for my all of my junior year. My fandom becomes strongest when I'm far away. It becomes a real sort of grounding point, I guess, to like, you can be anywhere in the world, far, far, far away from all of your family and friends, but you can find this, you can watch the same guys in the same uniforms play the same game that you've watched for so many years, and you can then, you know, talk about it with those people who are still far, far away, but it's a way of, I don't know, bridging those gaps and making home feel closer, making those people feel closer.
Yeah, totally. I think it's interesting, too, that you came from such a, like, eclectic baseball background where it's like, because I'm sure that, like, that to me, like, the fact that you landed on the Mariners actually, I think, says a lot, because for me, it was just they were the team that was, you know, I was born in the hospital that was closest to their stadium is really what it boils down to. And then I've never turned away from it. But you like made the decision that you were going to be a Mariners fan. And then with several moves and like living in different places, it sounds like that only strengthened it, which is what I was going to ask you about next, actually, is how not only moving to Cooperstown, but also like working for a national and I guess really international sort of like cathedral of baseball, how that's affected your Mariner fandom specifically, because I'm sure you have to, you know, you have to pay more attention to the other teams and history, and I feel like it would be easy for the Mariners to kind of fall by the wayside, but it sounds like it might have actually been the opposite for you. I think it's interesting, like, digging into history of baseball or of your favorite team, because in the case of the Mariners, like, it's really, it would be, like, a good way to not like the Mariners anymore, you know? Like, when I struggle, I think, to actually understand how bleak it was in the 70s and 80s for the Mariners, and really even the early 90s, I guess, too. Like, it's a different thing, I think, when you start that bad. Like, the Mariners have been bad for a while now, but for a certain generation, like, they at least have the memories of bad becoming good. All I have, for the most part, is bad, and we're just waiting on the good to happen. So I think it's, like, I'm fascinated by the whole idea of, like, looking backwards and, like, with you having to dig into so much old baseball, because that can definitely, like, rekindle your love for the sport. But with the Mariners, it's like, oh, we had Alvin Davis and a shitty stadium and a great announcer. Like, that's really all you can hang your hat on until this wave comes around. And that's the other thing where it's like, you look at the Mariners now and you're like, well, if this next wave does what the Griffey, Edgar, Randy Johnson wave does, then we have something again. But that's such a big if, you know what I mean? Like, it's so kind of scary to think about all that has to happen to have a good baseball team.
Oh, absolutely. And how much has to happen and how... timing is something that I've been really struck by in the last couple Mariners seasons. Is like, they just, beyond, you know, like, them being fringy competitors at best, like, they have not nailed the timing. And some of that you can predict, and some of that is just, I don't know, luck, for lack of a better phrase. Like, the fact that when they were really good in 2016, like, they just so happened to also hit a bunch of other really good teams at the same time. But then, you know, if they'd had their 2016 season in 2017, they might have been set. And right. I may be conflating these seasons. I can't keep them all straight in my head, I'll be honest.
It's tough. I'm really bad with remembering years off the top of my head. It kind of amazes me when people are like, oh yeah, that was 2011. Like, that blows my mind.
Yeah, no, they're all just like feelings or like specific memories of being at the stadiums watching certain games or like watching certain players.
And for like the memories, I make it about myself. I'm like, oh, that season was sophomore year. You know, that season was junior year. Like, that's how exactly. I remember for, like, reference points is what I was doing.
Exactly. Which does nothing when you're trying to, like, sound reasonably intelligent about baseball.
Yeah. But I think the thing you said about, like, luck and timing and all the variables is really, I think, like, on display with the Mariners. Because, I mean, it's like, there's really, like, two things. Like, if they were bad but not bad enough to have the number one pick and they don't get Griffey, who knows what happens? And then if they don't have the 95 run, they're most likely just not a team anymore. Like, those are the two things. It's being so bad you're the number one pick and then having that number one pick win you the biggest game in franchise history. Like, it's so easy to, like, distill it down to two things, which is obviously very reductive. But with the Mariners, like, it kind of is the whole thing. You know what I mean? And I also wonder if Safeco Field had never been built, what my Mariner fandom looks like. Because I think it'd be way harder to fall in love with baseball in the kingdom. And I'm kind of in awe of everyone who did, because it's obviously, you know, lots and lots and lots of people who were introduced to the Mariners in a truly garbage stadium compared to what we have now.
I cannot fathom going and watching a game at the kingdom, because so much of, like, some of my most favorite, like, baseball memories recently have been going to games at Safeco. I only went to one game at T-Mobile, so I'm using Safeco as my catch-all.
It's Safeco.
It was.
For the
it
next
is historically
year,
accurate.
5 or 6 years at Safeco.
But going to those games and, you know, sitting way, way in the upper decks drinking wine with, like, my best friend from high school and, like, every so often checking in on the game, but mostly watching the sunset. Other times, like, living and dying with every pitch in the pen, game 161 in 2016. Like, the stadium experience is so good there, and it's so communal. Like, I don't know why you would ever willfully subject yourself to the kingdom. I've been to 3-4 new stadiums since I moved out here, like MLB stadiums.
Yeah.
Some of them are great. New Yankee Stadium, very, someone described it to me as like an airport.
Yeah, it seems very sterile. Like, nothing feels lived in at Yankee Stadium. It all feels, even 10 years in now, it still feels like it's like one of those, like, display homes that no one actually uses.
Exactly. It's like a big, shiny strip mall.
Yeah. It is funny to, like, compare everything that we know, because objectively it's been, you know, not great, but then you at least have these little victories. Like, I remember going to Angel Stadium for the first time. That place sucks. Like, even Angels fans will admit, like, it's as cookie cutter as it comes. And then the crazy part is they haven't changed it. Like, most of those stadiums from that era have gotten at least like a mini facelift, but Angel Stadium is mostly just the same as it was in the 60s when they built it. And it feels like a, like just a generic chain restaurant. Like it definitely feels like people have been going there and they're like used to it. It's like a Chili's or a TGI Fridays. Where you're like, I know exactly what I'm going to get here, but why aren't you trying to get better? Like other people are lapping you right now.
Exactly. God, one of my favorite Twitter pictures from a couple years ago was this still shot, like from the broadcast when the Mariners were playing at Angel Stadium, and they had zoomed way, way out, and it just looked like the apocalypse had hit. And then there was also a baseball game happening because it was just like parking lots and brown, and like it just looked awful, like the worst place you would ever want to be.
Yeah, it's one of those stadiums too where the whole surrounding area is a parking lot, and I really don't like that vibe. I want to be able to like feel like I'm in the city and not just like part of this thing that got shipped out to the middle of nowhere because they had space.
Exactly. Well, and it, like, I can go way deep into this, but like the accessibility of ballparks is such a big thing. Like if you want to grow baseball, if you want to continue to have new fans and to have people love the game, like you've got to make your ballparks accessible to people who don't have cars.
Yeah, and like, you know, to tie it back to like actual current problems, like Mike Trout is just toiling away in that stadium that no one wants to go to. Like, I'm sure it has, you know, other, you know, socioeconomic issues, but also like the best player maybe ever is in a place that like you wouldn't want to go to, and like that obviously is a problem. And I don't think that there's an answer to it that's easy besides just like, you know, either trade him or build a new stadium. But like also that opens up a whole other bag of worms, because then you have the funding stuff and like how would any team want to trade for him and all that. So like it's so nice, I think, to realize that other teams have problems as well. Even when our problems feel like the biggest thing in the world, you can look just down south and realize, oh, the Angels have never really known what they're doing either. And that kind of makes me feel good about myself.
Oh, absolutely. And I'll confess, there's like a small part of me that appreciates the Mariners' futility the last few years.
Yeah.
Because I think it's made Mariners fans more fun to talk to, and a little more, I think, aware, I guess, than the average fan. So like I got to go see game one of the ALDS Yankees and Twins. And a guy sitting next to me, they announced Zach Britton. And the guy's like, Zach Britton? Who's that? I've never heard of him. It's like, you're wearing a Yankee shirt. Like, does everyone not know who Zach Britton is? But like, especially
yeah,
someone
of the, like,
on your team?
And he's good. Like, he's a well-known player. Yeah.
But
when the Mariners do get there, I talked about this, I think, with either Zach or Grant. Like, I think the people who are going to be there are going to be the diehards. Like, the rich people are going to have the really nice seats, but like it's gonna be such a like a family thing, because all of us, or I would hope all the people who are at the game are the ones who have, like, you know, would know who the Mariners Zach Britton is, and like would understand that this is so important because of everything that came before it with never making the playoffs in an entire generation. Like, that would be very disheartening even as a non-Yankees fan to meet that guy and realize he doesn't know who Zach Britton is.
Yeah, it was a weird moment. But even with Mariners fans, like, in the years before they, like, make it back to the postseason, it's just, I feel like, because they've been terrible and you can't focus on purely on-field production, people find new niches and they start to, like, dig into, you know, like, the personal stories of the players or the prospects, like we were talking about before. It makes for more interesting fan conversations. Like, my fandom, I'm realizing, is a very, it's more private than I ever thought it was. Like, I don't go out to a bar and, like, yell at the screen and, like, draw a lot of attention to the fact that I am, like, a sports fan.
Yeah.
And there are a whole host of reasons why not, but, like, I didn't get to talk about baseball with people other than my mother really until I moved back to Seattle after college and joined LL and became a part of this community. And I talk, obviously, to a lot more baseball fans now, and just without fail, like, people who like the Mariners, they care more, and they care differently, I guess.
Yeah, it's a big if you know, you know sort of thing. Like, if you've lived this life, you know exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah. And it was so special to, like, see everyone here celebrating Edgar this summer, and just, like, the sheer joy and pride that everyone had that he was finally getting in.
Yeah, let's talk about that. It's definitely on my list of questions to ask you. But, like, I mean, so it's your first year. You said you're coming up on your first year working for the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. And one of the first big things you get to do is induct Edgar Martinez into the Hall of Fame. Like, I'm obviously, like, I just want to know, you know, vaguely what that experience was like. But I guess also more specifically, like, what did that do for your fandom, especially in a time when you had been physically removed from Seattle and the community that kind of, you know, birthed the, like, fervent fandom that you were talking about, like, to see them all, you then, you know, kind of reappear at your doorstep in Cooperstown and all celebrate Edgar together. I'm sure that must have been very emotional. So I'd love to hear, you know, you just talk about that. There's no real question here. It's the classic talk about being there when Edgar Martinez was inducted into the Hall of Fame.
It was, I guess, and it wasn't just on my end induction weekend. It was coming here like a couple weeks before the election results were announced and just like crossing my fingers every day that he would finally make it. And a lot of it was selfish because I figured, like, okay, well, if he gets in, then this lets me still be connected to the Mariners, and this lets me still be connected to, like, all of my friends back home and the Mariners fans there. This is without playing favorites in, like, the stories I write and the stuff I share, this would let me still be a Mariners fan in this first transition year. So I was really, really overjoyed when we got the news about that, and it was great to just, like, I don't know, it was silly, small things, like, corresponding with people working in the Mariners front office and getting to see Edgar again during his orientation tour and getting to meet Holly and feeling this really unique connection. Like, oh, you're from Seattle? We have this, like, I don't know, it's just a special...
Yeah, it's instant when something like that happens.
And it's funny because it's the same connection whether it's, you know, Edgar Martinez or, you know, someone from Renton who's come down for a visit or come over for a visit.
Right.
And so during induction weekend, like, just getting to see all of these people running around in Mariners jerseys, and they've got cutouts of Griffey's face and Randy Johnson's face, and they're just, like, ecstatic to be there and so proud. And I sort of knew I was going to be a big mushy emotional mess during the ceremony, so I, like, had my sunglasses, I was, like, working throughout the entire thing, and obviously I sobbed during Edgar's speech because it was wonderful and beautiful, but I had also, basically, the waterworks started, like, the second Brandy Halliday stepped up to the mic. Like, I just cried for, like, 1 to 2 hours. And fortunately, it wasn't, like, the snotty, hard-to-see sort of tears. It was just, like, when you're cutting onions and, like, went about my business, posted whatever. That's a kind way of phrasing it.
Okay, I have a mental image for sure.
But yeah, and then I guess the most special piece of it, or one of the most special pieces of that weekend, I was working down at my desk sort of immediately after the ceremony, and my friend Peyton, who is our registrar at the Hall of Fame and the only fellow Seattleite here, and therefore the only Mariners fan here, she came down and she's like, hey, come on, we're putting the plaque up now. Like, we're putting up Edgar's plaque. I was like, cool. So I just assumed that we were going to go up and, like, maybe she thought it would be good for me to cover for social media. Maybe she just wanted me to, like, be there and see it go up on the wall, which, like, I'm not a very, I'm not very attached to things. So having, like, the plaque go up on the wall, like, yeah, cool. Mostly I'm happy that Edgar is getting this recognition and he gets this place in history. But yeah, bronze plaque is super cool too. So we walked upstairs, and long story short, basically the hall, if, you know, an employee is a really big fan of a certain team or a certain player or whatever, they try to give them the opportunity to, like, have a part of putting the plaque up on the wall. So Peyton brought they're super heavy, by the way, the plaques. They're like 50 pounds. They are not lightweight. So she brought the plaque in, and, you know, there are all sorts of fans there who are cheering when they bring it out. It's very sort of Simba-like, because, like, you bring the plaque in from this, like, corridor, and there are fans that are all lined up in the plaque gallery, but they can't get to, like, the main rotunda area. And so you bring the plaque out, and the person, like, holds the plaque up in the air a little bit, and everyone cheers and, like, chants the player's name, and then they come over, and two sort of maintenance guys screw it into the wall, and then you have to, like, there are these, like, goofy little baseball bolts, I guess, that help you finally, like, really seal the plaque onto the wall, and it's primarily decorative, of course. But Peyton screwed in two of the screws, and then I got to screw in the other two. And it was I felt very grateful to be able to be a part of something that had been such a long time coming.
Oh my god, yeah, I know. Like, I mean, I can't really put myself in your shoes, but I feel like that thing about, like, just being part of a moment, like, that is, like, a capital M moment for so many people, and, like, to be sort of a central figure in it, especially when you are, you know, such a fan and such a baseball person, like, that, I'm sure it was very surreal. And I was wondering, too, if they were, like, one of my next questions was going to be, like, do they make you tone your fandom down a little bit? Is it, like, a no cheering in the press box situation? But it sounds like it's kind of the complete opposite of that. Like, they sought you out and were like, this will mean a lot to Isabel, which is obviously very cool.
It is, yeah, almost the complete opposite. And I think, you know, different departments have different rules, obviously, but, like, my desk and little, like, corner cubicle area is decorated entirely with Edgar Martinez stuff. And that's not because, like, Edgar's my favorite player of all time. It's because any time there was, like, leftover stuff from, like, the big media, like, press conference that they had when his induction was first announced, or, like, when my boss's boss went and, you know, accompanied the plaque when it came to Safeco this summer, like, and he got the, like, Edgar Martinez Drive replica sign that he brought back. Like, it's all stuff that people have brought to my desk and been like, hey, you're a Mariners fan, you're from Seattle, we have this for you, would you like it? So there's certainly not toning down of fandom in that sense. And, like, we have these little name tags, and I fortunately don't have to wear it, because PR gets different rules than others. But they ask for they put your favorite team on there. So it's, like, your name, loosely your title, and your favorite team. So there's definitely, and, like, when Edgar came for his orientation visit, my boss sort of reached out and was like, would you like to write this story instead of our usual guy covering it, which was very special. Or, like, Adrian Beltre came and visited, and he took a tour with, inexplicably, Richie Sexson and their kids. But the curator who was leading the tour asked me if I wanted to be his assistant, because basically you want two people on these behind the scenes tours, someone who's actually leading it and someone to basically herd the rest of the family.
Okay.
He was like, hey, you're a Mariners fan. Adrian Beltre's here, and he's bringing his Mariners friend. Do you want to join? I was like, absolutely. So it's very fun to work at a place where that can be a part of your identity.
Yeah, that sounds incredible. I mean, as someone who loves to be validated for my taste and opinions, I feel like that's a dream scenario for me. Okay, Isabel, my last question for you then, which is kind of just the ethos of this whole series that we're doing, is I want to know, I mean, you've talked about your origin story, you've talked about things along the way that have helped you sort of reinforce your Mariner fandom, but I'm curious, like, at the heart of all this, like, what is it you think that keeps bringing you back, where every opening day, you know, no matter how much attention you have or haven't been paying, what do you think is the sort of magnetism about the Mariners that keeps you so interested, even when the Mariners on the field have been doing everything in their power to make us do the opposite and, you know, stop paying attention, stop caring? What is it about them that really speaks to you as a fan?
Oh, God. I guess fundamentally, I'm a really loyal person. I don't give up on people or things very easily. And, like, one of my big self-care things recently has been, like, if I'm reading a book and it's bad, I will return it to the library. I won't force myself to finish it. That's, like, a huge change in my life. I don't honestly know. I think that baseball as a whole has filled a lot of gaps in my life and enriched my life in ways that will make me terribly mushy and emotional, and a large part of that isn't just baseball, but it's Mariners specifically, like the fans I've interacted with and the friends that I've made all through, you know, Lookout Landing and general Mariners baseball people, like they're people who have changed my life. And turning on a Mariners game at this point in my life, it is less, and at this point in the Mariners' lives, it's less exciting in the way that, you know, it might be if you were like an Astros fan or a Dodgers fan, where you turn it on and you're like, I'm going to see some of the best play baseball right now. But you turn on the Mariners game and it's comforting, I guess, at this point. Even if the guys are completely different than they may have been a couple years ago, like, it's the same uniform. You get to listen to the same broadcasters. And again, it's that sense of home. And when I was living in Seattle, it was a sense of pride. And now living far away, it helps me feel closer to everything back home. And I guess the other piece of it, like, I became a much better Mariners fan this year when John moved out here, because baseball is so communal. Like, you can watch baseball on your own and it's cool, but it's always more fun to watch it together. I don't know. That's a hard question.
No, that's the point. I mean, I didn't expect anything like, you know, any sort of like manifesto. Like, it is kind of a rambling thought and a rambling question and answer. So I think that, you know, the beauty of this whole thing is that, like, nobody has the formula. Like, we don't really know why we're Mariner fans or why, what it is about this stupid sport and this stupid team that keeps bringing us back. But yet we're all still here. So I think that, like, the non-answer is really the only acceptable response to that question.
And I'm so glad you're doing this series. I think it's so much fun. I think talking about fandom and thinking about fandom is really interesting, and Mariners fandom especially, like, it's a unique breed, and I don't know. I think probably part of the reason I have a lot of trouble with this question, with the Mariners specifically, is that, like, I feel like an accidental Mariners fan, but aren't we all really accidental Mariners fans? Like,
yeah, I mean, I didn't ask to be born here, you know what I mean? Like, I could have It's, like, not complicated. If I had been born in Detroit, I would be a Tigers fan. Like, there's no way you would choose the Mariners if you had your choice.
Exactly, but now, and obviously you can change your allegiances, whatever, but I think there's something really beautiful about the fact that we let this sort of unique happenstance of being born in Seattle, choosing to stay connected to that city, and we've let that shape this thing that has become such a key part of our own identity.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for doing this, Isabel. This was a pleasure. If anyone would like to follow Isabel on Twitter, you can find her at 95 Coffee Spoons. I am at mroberson22. Thank you, as always, for listening, Isabel. You were a wonderful guest. I think our first guest of the series who wasn't just, I was born in Seattle and that's why I'm a fan. So thank you for allowing some variety here, and obviously your unique perspective now working for the Hall of Fame was lovely. So any final words, Isabel, or anything to plug, any hot take you want to fire off before we sign off?
For as long as I live here in Cooperstown, I will be asking all of you, friends and strangers alike, to come visit me. My God, please.
There it
but
is.
Truly, if you want to come visit the Hall of Fame, let me know.
All right. Open invite to our millions and millions of listeners. Be prepared for an onslaught of angry Mariner fans, Isabel.
Excellent. Can't wait. All right.
Well, thank you, everyone. Thank you, Isabel. And until next time, this was the Lookout Landing podcast, indent, Why I'm a Mariners Fan. Bye. Do you want to do a bye?
Yes.
Okay,
bye.
Hit me. Lovely. Trying to figure which deal I'ma take. Uh-huh. I woke up, couple meal on my plate. Let's eat. I'm investing in real estate. Uh-huh. I just went and gave my mama a 100. Uh-huh. Probably won't hear me open my mouth. Bless you hear me talking about finding some money. Let's go. As soon as I found that, I flipped that. Flip. I'm a little bit different. They get it.